Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. Are you enjoying wine?
And enjoy a Giants Wine Club.
We'll get right to the point here.
Just jump in. It's September. Baseball's literally in full throttle, and football and basketball starting next month, like all the sports. We're kind of at this like fun time in fall where there's just all sports all the time.
I know. It should be like that
all the time.
Every month.
Yes.
Every week.
Jeff, the producer, agrees.
Yes.
I think we just got a strong nod over there. So it's going to be a good show if we're starting in alignment with Jeff.
Right. Yes.
So.
We've got some nods. We're happy about that. Yeah.
Super happy about that.
Well, yeah. Tell us more, Carissa.
Yeah. So we were able to announce last month, if you missed it, that we, Sonoma County, has the first ever wine club in Major League Baseball. And it's in partnership with the San Francisco Giants. So,
woohoo.
I know. So if you're a Giants fan or a Sonoma County wine fan.
Or both.
Even better. There's a great new wine club you can join. There's two different tracks. There's the Home Run Club and the Grand Slam Club. You can join either one of those. And Evan Goldstein, who's the master sommelier.
For the Giants.
Yep. And the first one in Major League Baseball. Helps work with the Sonoma County wine growers, and we curate for both of those shipments, the Home Run and Grand Slam, six different Sonoma County wineries to represent their wine brand in the shipment. And super fun working with Evan. He, you know, throws out challenges like, let's have six different AVAs and six different varietals, and let's do maybe three more well-known wine brands that folks know, and then like three hidden gems that folks, you know, might not be familiar with. And so it's really fun working with him to sort of curate these kind of one-of-a-kind wine shipments that are from Sonoma County wineries.
I think it sounds amazing. And does he do like six wines to go with hot dogs, six wines to go
totally.
With
we're gonna
Cracker
do
Jack?
All the fun pairings. And he's starting to do little webinars where you can meet some of the winemakers and the growers behind the wines. And yes, and do just that. Talk about how does it go with ballpark food. And, you know, we were talking before we got on the show that it's like, you know, when you're watching your favorite sports team, whether they're winning or losing, you should be enjoying a beverage. And why not wine? And especially, why not Sonoma County wine?
Well, Sonoma County wine when things are good or bad.
Exactly. Isn't that always how it should be?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think it's super fun. And
it's so exciting. It took us about 2.5 years behind the scenes to negotiate, frankly, with Major League Baseball.
Yeah. I mean, it's a gigantic organization.
And it was the first of its kind for them. So they knew it was precedent setting. And so they had to really make sure they had thought through all of the ins and outs and how does it work and how is it to partner with a wine region versus a wine brand. That's a little unique. And so really fun to finally, I mean, I feel like I'm like, shh, we're working on this for 2 years.
Right.
And now
don't
like,
tell anyone.
Sing it from the rooftops. I actually had someone come up to me, they're like, why did you send out a press release? I thought you did this like 6 months ago. And I'm like, no, we've just been working on it for months and months and months.
Took a while to be official. Well, you know, now it is. So for more information, how can people find out?
Yeah, they can go to our website, sonomawinegrape.org, or they can go to the Giants website, and there'll be a link off the Giants website to the wine club. So either way, you can find it from our site or the Giants website.
All right, fantastic.
But most importantly, sign up.
Sign up, sign up, sign up, and we will be right back to tell you about our guest. For joining us on today's Good Stuff. In studio, we have John Hamill, wine grower, winemaker at Hamill Family Wines. So nice to see you. Thank you for joining us, John.
Great to see you. Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many things to ask. Carissa, you look like you're ready.
I know. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
See, I'm not going to pound on the table. I'm going to clap lightly. No, I think start at the beginning. Where did you grow up and how did you get here?
Yeah. So, from the very beginning, I was born in Arlington, Virginia, but most of my childhood was in the Bay Area, mainly in San Francisco for kind of my elementary school years, and then Marin for my high school years. So I have a parent and then a grandfather who went to the University of Wisconsin, so I was groomed to go there. Neither are from Wisconsin, by the way, but had found their way there.
Yeah.
And
wait, that's not that typical to find your way to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay. So two.
So, like,
so
that's
two,
not like the
okay.
obvious.
I'll give you the two. The two quick stories.
Okay.
So, my grandfather was a colonel in the Army during the Vietnam War.
Okay.
And they had a messaging. The military had a messaging crisis, and so they sent my grandfather there to get his master's in public relations.
Oh, interesting. Hmm.
My father grew up in Virginia, and basically in the 70s, the University of Wisconsin had an open enrollment policy, meaning they would let everyone in and let the academics kind of filter out who belonged.
Oh, wow.
So he didn't get into any college.
Interesting process.
Yeah, interesting process. They don't really have that these days.
Yeah,
but,
no.
It was the only school he got into, basically. So he went there by virtue of that. And he actually played, back in the day, they had junior varsity sports, and he played JV basketball at the University of Wisconsin. Yeah.
Okay. And, I mean, the Badger thing looms large in
Looms large. So I grew up going back there, like, once a year, and one of my siblings had to go there, and I got the lucky ticket, yeah.
You're like, oh, well, they're going, so I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
So what did you do after high school? Let's go back to, did you grow up around wine?
So I grew up a little bit around it. My parents, they basically were looking, I think, eventually towards retirement, but they bought a home in Kenwood, not too far away from you, Virginia, and they had a small vineyard. My dad loved wine. He wanted to make his own wine from the vineyard. So in kind of high school, I learned a little bit more about this. I came up to Sonoma, and we kind of had wine around the dinner table. My parents weren't shy about sharing it with us. So it was always around, but I wouldn't ever say that I really considered it as a profession in high school or college, seriously.
So when they were coming up and wanting to make their own wine, did they have a vineyard or they just had the house?
The house had a small one-acre vineyard attached to it that was planted in 97, so before they had purchased the home. So they had a decision whether to, farm it and sell the grapes or to make the wine themselves. And I think because my dad enjoyed wine, and I think he thought of it as a unique opportunity to try to make a little bit. Yeah.
But they went big. I mean, they went from that one-acre little vineyard to starting a pretty amazing estate winery just down the road.
That's right. So they planted four more acres not too long after they started making wine. They planted four more acres on that property. And then kind of, so a little bit where it intersects with my story is I graduated from college with a journalism degree. I'm on the radio now,
yeah.
So I guess it worked out.
Sorry, just a personal feeling.
We could talk a lot about that, but I think, I got into cooking, and in Madison, Wisconsin, they have a great farmer's market. There's a lot of organic growers that come to Madison. And I kind of never cooked as a kid, but when I was on my own, I had to figure it out. And I had a lot of friends that loved cooking, and then we had this kind of, just environment of great organic produce. And it was right around the time that Farm to Table was really coming back. So like the Michael Pollan book, everything, that was very much something I was reading and thinking about. And so I graduated and wanted to do something that was not going to be what my career would be. So I moved on to an organic farm on Mount Veeder.
Wow.
It's a kind of exchange. It's an organic farming thing where you basically work for room and board. Did that for about 3 months, and then I needed to get a job.
What were they growing?
So just produce. They had sheep, chicken, and, I mainly grew up in the city, so it was a great kind of opportunity.
Different world.
Yeah, and it was incredible. And right after that, I needed a real job, unquote, and basically started looking around for jobs, and I got a public relations job for a firm that was based in San Francisco, but mainly represented a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon producers in Napa.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
So I went from this very rustic, farm to having to meet with different, owners, winemakers, viticulturalists for different wineries in Napa. And, it's kind of shocking to see this very precise kind of agriculture where in a lot of instances, no expenses were spared. And hearing about kind of the philosophy behind it, I became really fascinated and started to ask my parents a lot more about what they were doing. I think my dad, so what were they doing? They were making a little bit more wine, and um, I, I, I think my dad thought about the wine industry as some kind of romanticized notion of what could be a family business in retirement, right?
You know, this happens. That's what brings you in.
This happens a lot, right? And I had kind of organically found my way there, and I think he saw my interest and talked to me about maybe growing it. And that's when we purchased kind of the larger property that we eventually built the winery on. That was 2010.
Okay. And it took a while, right? As most wineries do.
Yeah, it took a while. We opened in 2014 on that site. And prior to that, we were making wine in a custom crush facility on 8th Street East. And it was much more, you know, we had a small kind of house that we could host people, but it very much wasn't what it is today. Yeah.
So talk about the original site, or, you know, the main site where the winery and the tasting room is today.
Yeah.
Did you have a hand in kind of choosing that site, or what were you looking for?
Yeah, I think we were looking for a place to be able to grow the business. And I think, you know, at the time it was 2009-10 was when we were looking, and there was a lot on the market because of kind of the economic situation. And I think, you know, it was this decision between really starting from, you know, like building something up or trying to look for an opportunity of something that existed and maybe kind of, you know, repurposing that. And I think we took the long road. And kind of on that property, I mean, there is a house, but really everything else had to be built. There was vineyard as well at the time.
Okay. And tell us a little, I mean, I'd love to know more about the vineyard. I mean, because you still farm that vineyard, didn't replant it. Was it in good shape? Like, who had planted it originally?
Yeah. So it was originally planted by a person named Clarence Jenkins. And it has history back pre-Prohibition. It was part of a larger parcel that, if you know a lot of, you know, a lot of the history on the Bedrock piece, but basically it was a part of this bigger parcel that was, developed by, you know, George and Phoebe Hearst. So it has kind of that history. Prohibition happened, it changed hands, but eventually, two Italian families that started Columbus Sausage in San Francisco, they, I think, sold that business and started kind of Valley of the Moon. And eventually, you know, three generations later, one of the families sold one of the parcels to the Petersons. And then the other family, the Parducci family, held on to kind of a vineyard and a larger swath of land, and they sold that parcel to us. So that's a little bit of the history. The vineyards were in decent shape. We still have a lot of the pre-existing vineyard is still planted there. And then we've redeveloped some areas as well.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting.
It's a beautiful spot.
It is a beautiful spot.
By the story, but I'm like, it's in a beautiful part of Sonoma Valley and kind of tucked back and driving in. It's,
true Valley of the Moon.
Yeah, kind of unveils.
Yeah.
As you pull in, so
it's a unique look at kind of what the valley is, and you know, the more I've spent time in the valley, it's like there's a number of places like that. They all see the valley in a different way, and it's just a really, really beautiful area. So,
no, I love that.
And so you get involved partly out of your kind of interest in Michael Pollan and slow food is part of the inspiration
food,
as well. So how did that factor into, you know, how you saw yourself getting involved in your family business?
Yeah, you know, it's strange. I was talking to someone about this weekend, but the impact of that is huge for us. So when we initially started to take over the farming, it was important to transition to organic. So we were certified organic on that property in 2012. And we've kind of moved towards biodynamics. We were certified by Demeter in 2015. And then I think the last thing that has been really important in terms of like moving in a really kind of sustainable approach has been kind of like the influence of wanting to move away from irrigation. You know, I think a visit for me to France in 2015 was challenged by a person I had a lot of respect for, a grower producer in Champagne. He basically said, if you're irrigating your vineyard, you're basically have as much connection to the vineyard as potted plants would, you know, so no terroir basically if you irrigate. And I think that idea is pretty extreme, right?
Yeah, especially from a champagne producer.
Yeah, where it's no big deal to be able to dry farm. Here, it's a real struggle, and I came back, and there are people that have experience with it, one of which is over in Napa Valley. He's the technical director for Dominus, a guy named Todd Mastero. Mm-hmm.
Amazing guy.
Yeah, amazing guy. And I reached out to him, asked him basically for, you know, if he'd be willing to get coffee with me while I asked him questions about what it takes to dry farm. And his response was dry farming is his passion and he'd love to spend a day with me in the vineyard. That was 2016. So 2017, we started to move towards not non-irrigation. And now we have about 75% of our vineyard is not irrigated. So I think all of those things, you know, I think on the one hand, they're guided by, you know, wanting to be able to farm in a way that is about stewardship for the property in the long term and the plant health, the soil health, the local environment. I think the double bonus though is that you're rewarded with quality, and you see wines that have more connection to where they're being grown, and with that comes more complexity, more depth. So I think in a lot of ways, you know, I think those things have been important, and in a weird way, you know, they were probably influenced by my time. I think the first time I heard the word biodynamic was in Madison at, you know, the farmer's market. I had never heard of it before.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's still, I think for so many people, a hard concept to kind of wrap their head around.
Totally.
It's like you get bits and pieces from different wineries that might mention it, and then what actually is it? People don't really understand. So,
yeah.
I mean, can you sort of summarize it for a general audience? Like,
yeah, you know, I'll try my best.
I mean, I know, that's a big ask.
I mean, we've got about 3 minutes before the break, so that's...
You've got 3 minutes to explain it.
Okay, start the clock. Yeah. Okay, so the way that we think about it in very, like, basic terms is trying to create more of a farm that is... I think uses permacultural ideas, so isn't just purely one monoculture. And within that, I think a really easy thing to grasp is that you have wildland that's preserved, right?
Yeah.
That's the ultimate kind of, I would say, balance in nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to have a piece of that on the property is really important. I think what has influenced us, or maybe why I think if you think about agricultural tradition for, like, human civilization, like, we have 7,000 years of farming, right? And probably the past 200 years, a lot of the advancements were the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, a lot of pretty much how they learned to farm was based on empiricism, right? And trial and error, and really being attuned to what was going on. So I think in a weird way, I'm not anti-science. We use the scientific method. That's super important for us. But I think being able to reference a way of thinking that was thinking about things in a different way is important and brings ultimately more depth to how we address issues in the vineyard. So I think in simple terms, that's a very big idea, but mm-hmm. like in really simple terms, it's trying to use natural inputs as organic and natural as possible. As much as possible, we try to use those from the local environment kind of around the vineyard and create balance in the vineyard with those tools.
And just, I mean, I remember so many people just explaining it as like just paying attention. I mean, it really is just, are you in your vineyard a lot? Are you paying attention to what's going on and reacting and to, you know, things that you actually can physically see?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have to take a quick break.
Yes.
We will be right back on with John Hamill. Stuff with our guest John Hamill, wine grower, winemaker at Hamill Family Wines. And so you were telling us a little bit about the wine growing side.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start thinking about the wine making side?
Yeah, I thought about it super early on. I was actually more drawn to the winemaking side, to be honest. I worked a harvest, I got very hooked, and I mean you see the transformation from grapes to wine, and it's a beautiful thing. And still, we're, you know, is one of those things that just kind of really reiterates why we do what we do, you know? And then being able to see the wines age. So I love that side of things, and actually became more serious, and I would say, I think, not obsessive, but just kind of, I really got drawn into the growing side in a way that I learned the winemaking first, and I'm still learning, you know, in a way. So I got most of the learning done early, but I really came to the growing side later. I think when we initially started, we were making wines that I think were very technically like well made, but in a sense were missing the connection in a deeper way to where they were grown. And I think some things, you know, were the technique in the winery. Some things were how we were growing the grapes that kind of, you know, obscured that connection. But I think once we really understood our sites in a more meaningful way, in a deeper way, got the farming to be balanced with what the vision was for us, I think once you do that, the winemaking becomes very easy and non-technical and really becomes a less is more kind of scenario. And so that, I mean, is still happening. We're still trying to get to be lighter and lighter with kind of the touch on everything. But I think we really got into a groove with that kind of 2022 in a real way. But, you know, 2019 onward has really been a shift towards that. And that's kind of been an evolution, and still today, like, we're finding techniques in the vineyard and the winemaking that, you know, I think you have a wine that is maybe the dream of what you want to make. It's always ahead of you, and every year we're getting, you know, a shade closer to that.
Well, I mean, speaking of, like,
wait, so will you ever arrive?
I think hopefully not, because I think, you know, every year the season's different. The table gets reset. There's a different, you know, set of challenges, and I think maybe it's, you know, it's a problem of mine, but never trying to just feel like we cooked it the right way. Let's just do that recipe over and over and over. I think tasting wine, traveling, you see different things. The climate, you know, there's impacts in terms of climate change that we're going to have to be flexible with and dynamic with. So in a way, I don't know if it appeals to me to just, like, basically, you know, like, you could brew beer, you know, and essentially kind of just try to recreate the same thing and be more about consistency. And for me, it's more about being free and having to be dynamic with kind of what the season gives you. And also trying to get better every year, you know, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, just, you mentioned 2019 onward, more or less kind of dialing it in to some extent, but I mean, totally different vintages. So
yeah,
like, talk about, like, resetting the table every year. Like, you really had to respond to really warm vintages, cooler vintages, long seasons, short seasons. How does, I mean, does that influence sort of what you're doing in the vineyard for the foreseeable future, or what have you sort of learned over these ups and downs?
Yeah, in a way, it was a great, I mean, difficult, but a great challenge. You know, I think what does climate change mean here? I mean, I think in general, it means my answer would be more erratic weather patterns. So yeah, 2017, almost double the amount of rainfall. 2019, almost double amount of rainfall compared to average. 2020, 21, we basically get a third in 2020, and then, or in, sorry, two thirds, and then a third in 2021. So that's super extreme change. And we're trying to navigate it. I think the thing that's really helped us be successful is once we did make the shift predominantly towards dry farming, I think what you're doing in our climate is you're forcing the roots to be deep, right? That's the only way, when you don't get any rain from material rain from May onwards, that the vines are going to be able to survive and have a crop. So once you push them in that direction, they're much more resilient against kind of weather changes. And then I think your comment on biodynamics being about presence in the vineyard, I think you just have to be there and see what's going on. Every year we kind of have a new challenge that we hadn't exactly seen before that we have to address. So you don't see everything, you know, in 1 or 2 or 3 years. It takes time, but being present, you're able to usually react in a way that you still get past it and get through it.
Were your parents always sort of pushing for you to be involved, or was it a little bit of a surprise that you took on this role?
No push at all.
Yeah.
No, zero push. And yeah, so it really was, I kind of found my way to it more organically than, obviously I knew a little bit more from what they were doing about it, but No, they never pressured me, and I love what I do. Outside of my work, I drink wine, and I love seeing the world of wine. Like, it's a passion for me.
I was just going to ask you what you do for fun.
Yeah, well, I play, I have a family, too, and I do other things, but...
But wine's a lot of it.
But wine's a lot of it. Yeah. If you're asking me the question, I also like tennis. Oh, I love playing tennis.
Okay.
But,
oh, there you go.
Yeah. All right. Great. All right. Yes.
Just checking.
So we should talk a little bit about Moon Mountain the main property, the first property where the winery is technically Sonoma Valley, but it starts to go up in elevation to Moon Mountain. So explain a little bit about Moon Mountain.
Yeah. Moon Mountain really has become a lot of my passion. So we talked about the main vineyard, which goes up to about 300 feet elevation in terms of the vineyards that are planted. Generally, the lower limit for the Moon Mountain district is 400 feet elevation. So that property doesn't really get, or our vineyards on that property don't get up that high. Our main vineyard, Nuns Canyon, is at about 1,200 feet and goes up to about 1,600 feet. And it's on the very northern limit of the Moon Mountain District. Kind of the neighboring vineyards are Kistler's Estate Vineyard, mm-hmm. Where they made wine for a long time. They no longer do. And then Montecillo, I think those are the two kind of big ones right next to us. Incredible area. I think the vineyard and that area generally has kind of a mystical sensibility for me. So it's an ancient, now inactive volcano. So the soils are old lava flow, what we'd call basalt today. And there are a couple things that are really important for that site. Montecillo Vineyard, which is a neighboring vineyard, was purchased by a family that's associated with the Stewart Wines in Napa mm-hmm. In 2022. I know the new owners pretty well, and they shared with me kind of this research document that came with the transaction of the vineyard. In that piece, it was by a guy named William Heintz, who you may know, but was basically a Sonoma Napa wine historian.
That's right.
And he put together this document that was kind of on that property in the neighboring parcels. And in it, he was talking about kind of the first mountain vineyard in the Napa and Sonoma area. And he was describing how to get there. It was in that general kind of area. And I'm reading the description of how he's describing to get to the vineyard. And basically, it sounds like how we get to our vineyard, right?
right.
I was like, okay, this is interesting. And so he talks about a person named Thomas Now, who was pushed by Augustine Haresti. Basically, Augustin Haresti, I think, being Hungarian, and in Europe, a lot of the vineyards are in the hillsides. He wanted people to develop vineyards in the mountains, right, and fully dry farm them. The vineyards prior to that were more riparian areas where they were using water. And so this article talks about this vineyard that was planted by a guy named Thomas Now, and Augustin Haresti had kind of pushed him to develop the vineyard there. And this is the 1850s. So according to William Heintz, it was the first mountain vineyard.
Wow.
And we looked later at our parcel records, and Thomas Now owned kind of a 10-acre area within Nuns Canyon.
Wow.
So very, very cool in a way. Not the first vineyard, in California by any means, but first vineyard in the Napa-Sonoma area that was kind of at elevation or in the mountains.
Incredible. Yeah.
Long history, and I think a lot of what we're doing today, we dry farm that entire site. Sounds in a way innovative, but they did it in the 1850s, right? It's back to the future. It's been a really, really incredible site to be able to work with. The wines we get just have so much character. I mean, when I talk about less is more, you can do less when you have a site that you work with that has that kind of voice and character in the wines. So we've been fortunate to basically be able to work with such a special place.
Yeah. So. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about that place. On with John Hamill, wine grower, winemaker at Hamill Family Wines. So you have these really special spots where you're growing grapes. Tell us about the wines themselves. How many wines are you making?
Yeah, so we basically kind of focus on, I would say, two main tiers of wine. Everything we grow, everything we make is estate grown, so that's an important thing. And we, so we have an estate level, and that's usually a blend of kind of different properties. So we have three main vineyards that we farm. Above that is kind of what we call our Nuns Canyon level, which is all kind of vineyard designates that come off of that site. So those are kind of the two different tiers. And I think within the Nuns Canyon level wines, we're usually, it's not just everything that we make from that site. It's really focusing on, for us, what we found is the stonier the soil in general, the more minerality, the more depth you get with the wine. So I think with kind of our Nuns Canyon level, it's really about highlighting those areas within that vineyard. It's an old, basically ancient, you know, volcanic lava flow. So it runs kind of like the stones run like veins through the property. Mm-hmm. And so understanding where those are hasn't really been intuitive. I think dealing with volcanic soils, it's
nature.
Strange. Yes,
yeah.
But it's a very chaotic geology, right, based on how it's formed. So sometimes you have the decomposed version of the rock at the top of the hill and the stony part at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So kind of things that we, you know, your intuition gets rattled all the time when you're dealing with it. And we've been fortunate to work with a guy who's a terroir expert. He has a PhD in it. You can get that from France. I don't think you can get that here.
right.
But a guy named Pedro Parra we've worked with. This will be our 10th year working with him. And you need someone like that to be able to deal with a site that is that complex with a geology that is so violently formed, mm-hmm. you know, and
doesn't he kind of approach everything from like a jazz perspective too? Like speaking of the chaos,
he's a failed jazz musician. So I think in a sense, and every time I'm with him, I never hear the same thing. It's always a new thing. Yeah. So he's always improvising and on. But I think, you know, it's funny you say that. One thing that we, and this goes back to maybe the question, but a lot of what he talks about is terroir, but also as a producer, what is your sound, right? Mm. And that's kind of the style of the wines, mm-hmm. And how you interpret the terroir. And I think there is a human, you can talk about terroir, but really there's always the human element of how that is shown in the wines. And I think over time, our sound has become very much about really trying to, again, if you understand your site and you believe in it and you're confident in its character, you want to show that more and more. So for us, that has been kind of manifesting and moving away from a lot of barrique or barrel, moving more towards cask, which give our larger oak vessels that are less impactful in terms of the oak. So you see more of the terroir with the wine, and also moving a good amount of our aging to concrete. So again, giving like a good amount of purity to the wines and really showing, I think, ultimately where the wines are coming from. So I think stylistically, I think we want to make wines that have minerality. We want to make wines that show, you know, our place. We're a warmer California place. There should be generosity with the wines, right? But I think in combination with very stony soils, you get a beautiful energy that comes from the soil and gives kind of vibrancy to the wine. So we really like freshness. I think we found that the lighter we are, actually the more we enjoy kind of the expression of the wine. So we try to be very light-handed with extraction, oak, all those sorts of things. Alcohol, generally, we're more or less in the 12.5 to 14 range. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think when you turn everything down, you start to see the terroir in a real way with the wines, which has been fascinating for us.
You have a piece of terroir with
yeah,
you.
Okay,
with
so,
you. Explain,
yeah.
please.
Okay. So to not create too much, you know, distracting noise, I'll tell you a little bit about it. So what I brought is basalt, which is basically old lava flow. Lava is solidified magma. In rare instances with basalt, you basically, solidified magma means you have a lot of iron and magnesium. So basalt has a lot of iron and magnesium. Mm-hmm. As the iron oxidizes, as the lava flows, in rare instances, you get a compound that's called magnetite. Magnetite has a magnetic attraction. And what's amazing is, I'll show you with the stones in a moment, but basically they have a magnetic attraction. So you can hold a magnet, you can pick up small stones, and it'll cling to rocks there. You can hold a magnet above the topsoil, which is just the decomposed version of the rock, and it jumps up and we'll stick to it. So
fascinating.
Weird and fascinating.
Yeah.
What is that? Why would I bring that? Okay. So I think it's a really interesting metaphor for like what is minerality in wine. It's energy coming from the rock. And what's cool is when the rock actually has an energy, a physical energy, you can see it's a great kind of metaphor. But I think more practically, a lot of our wines, you know, it's a reflection of how much iron is basically in the stones. And I think in a lot of our red wines especially, the minerality is really, I would say, defined by the iron content that you have. So I brought it to give you guys a little bit of a demonstration.
It's great. It's a complex subject.
Yeah. I know.
We're going to take a quick break. We come back to wrap things up with John Hamill. Up on the good stuff with John Hamill, wine grower, winemaker, Hamill Family Wines. Really enjoyed seeing the rocks that you brought in, the terroir that you have in your pocket.
That he can pick up with a magnet.
I know, that I can pick up with a magnet. Super interesting. So we would like people to know what they can, you know, how can they come visit? What can they experience at Hamill Family Wines?
Yeah, so we do tours and tastings. We also have a chef, so we do kind of a chef's table pairing. And then last thing kind of that we offer is a library tasting, a collector's experience is what we call it. So some current wines with some library wines. In general, I mean, the best way to do that is through our website, but also can call to make an appointment to do that. So we generally like to show the winery to any visitor. It's great for us to be able to talk a little bit about the wine growing. The tasting room looks out over the vineyard, and we have the winery too. So it's a very, I'd say, like three-dimensional kind of experience for anyone that visits.
Beautiful place to visit. Open daily by reservation, 707-996-5800. Booking at HamillFamilyWines.com is the best way to get in touch.
Yeah, follow along on Instagram at Hamill Sonoma.
Thank you.
Look at all the stuff. So, Tuesday night wine.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of stuff.
Yep. I know. Well, I'll just jump in because I can. So, after you described it all, I'm headed straight to your Nuns Canyon Vineyard, Moon Mountain District, Cabernet Sauvignon. So, it has a little Cab Franc in it?
It does have a little Cab Franc.
So how typically?
Typically about 3/4 Cab and about a quarter Cab Franc.
Excellent. Well, that's what the cork I'm pulling on Tuesday night. So thank you for that wine.
Yeah.
All right, John, what are you going to have?
So we were just pouring next to Hanzel Winery at an event. You know, we're Hamill. We're always right next to them.
That's true.
I've long loved their Chardonnays off the property. Again, Moon Mountain District, kind of the southern end. So you know, the opposite end of the thing, but really classic Chardonnays, have a lot of minerality. They age really well. So
they're excellent.
Jason Jardine, I think, is also doing really innovative things in the vineyard. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would have picked a Hanzel, but you're here, so I'm going to definitely pick a Hamill, and I'm going Estate Grenache from Moon Mountain because did you plant the Grenache or what is... Okay, you did.
A little bit was planted and we developed a lot more. Okay. So it's been, a big thing for us over the past 10 years.
Fantastic. And you are wearing a hat, I should say, that says Garnacha on it. So maybe it was the power... I think I would want that Grenache anyway for my Tuesday night.
Yeah. Well, you love Grenache.
I love Grenache. I love Syrah. I love everything, really.
Well, that's a good reason to drink a bottle of wine on Tuesday night.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. No, thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure seeing you guys and catching up. Yeah.
Great conversation. Booking at HamillFamilyWines.com or just visit HamillFamilyWines.com. Go visit.
We should go. Estate experience, collector's experience, chef's experience.
That's a lot of different experiences.
It is. I love it.
And it's a beautiful part of Valley of the Moon.
Is.
A lot of history, to your point. You do kind of see bedrock across the way. Yeah. You can look up toward the Mayacamas. Nothing better.
Well, there you go.
All right. Well, from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.